south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, before we get to some of the heavier stuff here, I just happened to be out and about in the big city having a coffee at one of those little street corner cafes. You might know them, or maybe you don't. The ones that serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner so cheaply, for sometimes as little as $2 complete, with drinks, desserts, salads, and everything included. Yep, in Latin America, you'll find little places like that on every street corner, sometimes two or three of them in a row. Now, I don't recommend you eat any of the food that's prepared in the kitchen at one of those places. I don't. I learned that the hard way many years ago. So I'll stop in just to have a cup of coffee out of the espresso machine. Now that's something that's difficult to contaminate, you know? Coffee out of an espresso machine, that's okay, and anything out of a bottle. So why avoid eating prepared food at these places? Well, if you keep your eyes open, you'll see why. The workers in those places touch everything. They wipe the dirt off their kids' faces, pet the dog. They touch their eyes, shirts, nose, pants, doorknobs, hair. They hit the bathroom where, more often than not, there'll be no paper towels, just a moist or humid cloth towel. Yuck. And then they touch the food. So, don't think because something's cooked and cooked very well and smells great that in the back room it hasn't been sneezed on, used as a runway or racetrack by a few cucarachas and flies. Now, of course, some kitchens are more hygienic than others and that might not have happened. Though one thing you can be sure of, the items on the plate were surely shoved around and rearranged by a few dirty little fingers to make the plate balance out. And especially watch out for the tortillas and the bread. Because for sure they've been sorted, touched, and tossed by more than one person before they ever got to your table. So knowing that, I know my limits and follow my rules. Which is why I've only had Montezuma's Revenge maybe once or twice in the past dozen or so years. Meanwhile, I know many gringos, especially backpackers, who get the squirts regularly. Some even look at it as the price you pay for living down here, and I'm telling you, it's the price you pay for eating street food and following your nose instead of your common sense. Because, like I said, the food almost always smells great. And when you're hungry, so hard to resist, but resist. Which is why I always have some nuts or some fruits in the car. I don't want to be so hungry that I have to resort to eating at one of those places. That would be taking a big chance. Oh, and lately, a lot of the street vendors are starting to use gloves and plastic to put the fruit in and such, but don't be fooled by that. They don't use them properly. They're cross-contaminating all the time. Hey, I've watched how these guys cut the fruit. Sure, they're putting it in a plastic bag and they've got plastic gloves on, but they're wiping the blade off on their pants. In fact, I've even got a photo of a guy cleaning his fingernails with the knife he just used to cut up the fruit. All right, so as not to gross you out any more than I have, where were we? Oh, yeah. So there I was, sitting in one of those coffee shops, and right next to me was a table full of ladies in indigenous clothing. Turns out they were all cleaning ladies. This was their early morning gathering place before they jumped on the chicken buses that would take them to their various job locations throughout the city. You could say every morning this was the place that had their cleaning lady coffee clutch. Now, get this. Here they were, right smack in the middle of the greatest coffee country in the world. And what were they drinking? Instant. Each topping off her cup with about 5 spoons of sugar. By the way, every one of these ladies had at least one gold-rimmed front tooth. Some of the older ladies, a whole rack. Hey, you know, I've said it before, that's a status symbol amongst the poor and lower middle classes in Latin America. And the funny thing is, if they make it financially and move into better middle-class and upper-middle-class neighborhoods, which is kind of rare, by the way, the first thing they ditch is the gold in the front teeth. But that's another story. Anyway, there I was, early in the morning, sitting all alone at the table with my smooth-as-silk $1.50 double espresso. Well, as luck would have it, that little gathering of 5 or 6 cleaning ladies was close enough to me that I overheard their entire conversation. And wouldn't you know, the topic was salaries. What they were being paid for being muchachas. That's the word they use for maids and cleaning ladies here. Muchacha. Also, if you check it out in the Yellow Pages, you know, they still have Yellow Pages down here, you'll see in the Help Wanted ads that they're called empleadas domesticas, meaning domestic employees. Anyway, they're having a heated discussion about salaries and benefits. Now, just a little background here. Seems like throughout Latin America, cleaning ladies, that is, domestics or muchachas, are treated quite unfairly by most of their Latin bosses. Their bosses are almost always Latin, by the way. And naturally, we gringos and expats often employ muchachas or domestics, but we're heavily outnumbered by the Latin population, of course, so only in the gringoized areas do muchachas ever get a chance to work for us. Now, I've mentioned the strict class system here, and you think you've seen classism or racism up in the States, you ain't seen nothing till you've been down here. And unfortunately, the vast majority of the classism and racism is directed towards the indigenous population. They do stand out from the regular Ladinos or Latinos, if not because they're always darker and smaller, but because of the indigenous clothes they wear and often the gold tooth thing. However, as a rule, they're still quite happy and love to work. And their employers, who are sometimes pretty low class themselves, still treat them as second, even third class citizens. It's amazing, and I've seen this a number of times. A family, let's say, that makes $600 a month. You know, that's utter poverty for a family of four in the States. Kind of middle class here. Even on $600 a month, they'll have a live-in cleaning lady or a lady that comes in a couple times a week. And most of the time, according to our standards, they treat her kind of badly. Sometimes like a slave. Like I said, I've seen it myself. I've been in houses where the owners are sort of white trash by our first world standards. They live in a cold water dump. That's virtually impossible to keep clean since they've got no screens on the windows, generally a couple of untrained dogs running around all over the place, most likely on municipal water like most Latin city dwellers are, meaning the water is only running full pressure out of the tap probably 12 hours or less a day. And sadly, I've seen many people who have muchachas or cleaning ladies, and the family doesn't have a washing machine or has one and it's broken. So the muchacha does all the clothes by hand in the big wash basin outside known as a pila. So she's doing all the laundry by hand, mopping and scrubbing and sweeping away. She's cooking, ironing, taking care of the kids, and doing the shopping by chicken bus because she can't use the car if the family even has one. And the boss lady of the house, it's always the boss lady who's in charge, you know, will shout out orders, often quite edgily. In fact, I've been in houses where the boss lady has apologized for the condition of the house and blamed it on the cleaning lady. In fact, I remember one boss lady called her muchacha a mula and an idiota in front of me. Translation, idiot ass. Yeah, right. The house is a dump, not because the dogs are crapping all over the place and the house needs paint and new wiring and plumbing. It's because the muchacha is an idiot ass. Oh, by the way, you might wonder, how can a family making only around $600 a month afford a muchacha or a cleaning lady? How can that be if the minimum wage is $250 to $300 a month? That would be a third to a half of a $600 a month salary, right? Aha! Let me explain something you're never going to hear about anywhere else, I guarantee it. The fact is, there are minimum wage laws, but they only apply, or I should say, can be enforced for workers on the books, people on the tax rolls. That would be maquilas or factories, franchises like McDonald's and the IHOP. That would be employers who pay workers with a payroll check and not by cash. So unskilled workers on the books get minimum wage plus what they call prestaciones. Translation, benefits like Christmas bonus, summer bonus, paid vacation days, days off for holidays, and participation in those notoriously medieval national healthcare systems. So like FICA in the US, which is a corrupt system that Latin governments have made even a worse copy of. That means for people working on the books here in Latin America, employee and employer kick in some percentage points so that Latin governments can mismanage that money too. But back to that question, how can someone earning $600 a month pay minimum wage, $250 to $300 a month, to a cleaning lady? The truth is, only a tiny percentage of cleaning ladies make the minimum wage. In fact, that's exactly what these ladies were talking about at the little restaurant/coffee shop. Turns out, Cleaning ladies throughout Latin America are talking about unionizing. Yep, super big lag time there, but bound to happen since there are many abuses. Now, when you're in the big city and you hire a muchacha slash cleaning lady, you'll find almost none of them make minimum wage except the ones you contract from a cleaning service, because that service will be on the books, paying taxes, etc., and will have to pay minimum wage. Of course, you'll pay more than that because the owner of the company will get his cut. By the way, that's how many gringos find their first cleaning lady, because they don't know who to ask and don't know how to find one because their Spanish sucks. They check the papers and local OLX Craigslists and such for housekeeping services. Funny enough, in gringoized areas, it's always a gringo who starts a business like that because he realizes that's a niche and he can make money at it. I mean, what's a gringo or gringa to do, especially if they don't speak Spanish? They'll either ask another gringo for a recommendation or they'll go to one of those housekeeping services where someone speaks English. And for sure, they'll pay a lot more than minimum wage. So it's a fact. Probably only 1 or 2% of all cleaning ladies in Latin America make minimum wage. Really a pretty pathetic statistic considering all the work they do. So you've got that 1 or 2%, probably most of them working for gringos on the gringo tourist trail. While off the gringo tourist trail, they're at the mercy of what the going rate is in the area and what their employers want to pay. Which brings us back to the question of how a family making $600 a month can pay for a full-time or live-in cleaning lady. Well, get this. When I was listening to these cleaning ladies in the restaurant, I heard one say that her sister only makes $50 a month. Of course, she's a live-in and she gets room and board, but $50 a month. Then another one of the ladies spoke up and said she only made $150 a month. Then another one said, I make $200. And the last lady said, well, I only make about $100. And you know, when you hear things like that, you start feeling sorry for that whole segment of the population, kind of the backbone of the lower class society. Most of these ladies work long hours, and often they're on the chicken bus to and from work an extra hour or two a day also. Only the lucky ones seem to live near their places of employment. Now, these weren't live-in muchachas. Obviously, they were taking the bus. As for live-in muchachas, that's a different story altogether. They don't get to go home at night. They're on call 24-7 at the master's house. Dishes, ironing, mopping, cleaning windows and toilets, even shopping and being a nanny for the kids. That's part of the job, too. Now, it's true that most gringos I know pay the minimum wage even more because, well, to us it's cheap. Actually, unbelievably, ridiculously cheap. And as mentioned in a previous show, sometimes we overpay and distort the wage structure. But back to that little cafe slash diner, which, by the way, is in a very busy section in a large Latin American town. Yet it was so far off the gringo tourist trail that I didn't see a single gringo that whole day I spent in the city. So with my ears perked up, I recognized they were having an ongoing discussion about a new thing called a union in Spanish. A sindicato. The number one benefit, of course, was that all cleaning ladies would finally get minimum wage. However, not once in that whole discussion did I hear any one of those ladies say, yes, but if we get minimum wage, then all the people that employ us who make around $600 to maybe $1,500 a month, they just couldn't afford cleaning ladies anymore. And that's a huge section of the Latin population. So it was a conversation with a lot of loose ends and much disinformation. Oh, and speaking of gringos bidding up labor prices, there is a way, you know, to find out if that's the case where you're setting up your plan B. Well, good old expat Eddie, who has a ton of experience in hiring and firing too, he says when you're interviewing anyone for a muchacha job, an entry-level job, a grunt job, if when you're asking them about their previous salary history, they start talking about dollars or pesos or colones per hour. Well, that's purely a gringo influence because Latins don't get paid by the hour. They get paid by the day, week, 2 weeks, or month. Now, by far, the most common way Latins are paid is by the quincena, which is every 15 days. And the second most common way to get paid is by the month. That would be mensualmente. Which is why on the 15th and the 1st, when you're driving around, you'll see there are big lines of grunt workers in front of banks. And I mean big lines, sometimes 10, 20, 30, even 50 deep, all waiting to get some of their direct deposit money out in cash. Because, you see, as opposed to what's happening up in the first world, it's still very much a cash-based society with the middle, lower middle classes and poor. So about 70% of Latin society depends on cash. Meanwhile, it's part of the middle class, upper middle class, and the wealthy who are getting eaten alive by credit card interest rates. They're the ones who will buy a coffee and a pastry at Dunkin' Donuts for $1.50 and put it on plastic. So where were we? Oh yeah, that group of muchacha slash cleaning ladies talking about unions. Well, first of all, you got to wonder who's organizing these ladies, because through NGO donations and union dues and such, the organizers are the ones who are going to make the real money. Like all unions, eventually the leaders will become corrupt and live like little princes, go on junkets, stay at four-star hotels. You know the drill. Now, I'm not saying these ladies don't deserve a union. Yeah, but unions are corrupt. So whatever they're getting promised, they might get it at first, but eventually they'll be very disappointed, just like they are with their maggotist politicians, if that's a word. If it is, I just coined it. I think everyone deserves to make up a word once in a while, don't you? So it was obvious. One of the ladies, the big talker, was promoting the union big time, saying, hey, we'll get minimum wage, finally. Plus, we'll be on the books, we'll get prestaciones, which means we'll get on the national health care, paid holidays, vacation, Christmas bonus, and summer bonus, called, by the way, Aguinaldo and Bono 14. But then, one of the ladies spoke up and said, I already get minimum wage, and my boss gives me a Christmas and summer bonus, and a lot of extra little things, too. Then one of the other ladies said, yeah, but you're lucky. Your boss and his family are from Inglaterra, primer mundistas, meaning first world people from England. And it did seem the others were kind of jealous. Then she said the family even paid for her daughter's hospital bills when she had her baby. And not at the public hospital either. It was one of the expensive private ones, she said, with, I noticed, some pride in her voice. She was lucky. You could say she won the muchacha lottery. She was working for a foreigner. So the debate raged on, and 4 out of 5 of those ladies were all for the union. But the one respectfully stated she probably wouldn't join. All right, here's another muchacha story that you just have to hear. I know this Latin American colonel stationed at a base far away from any big Latin city. It's a base way out in the jungle, probably 200-300 guys stationed there. Now, by hook and crook, I met this guy. He invited me to a Christmas party at his family home in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. So he was stationed at this base most of the time, but he had his wife and 2 kids living in the big city, San Pedro Sula. So I'm at this Christmas party, and I noticed his muchacha has a nice little maid's uniform on. Demeaning to us, yes, but to Latins, well, that's how they delineate the class system. She couldn't have been 80 pounds, and she looked no older than 12. So I asked the colonel how much she made, and he said $150 a month. And I said, she from around here? He said, oh, no. You don't want muchachas from the big city. You want a farm girl, and you want to get them young so they don't bring any bad habits along with them. Then he told me, she's a girl from one of the tiny towns up by the military base. He said, the small town ladies want their daughters to get jobs in the big city because there's not a lot of work way out in the boonies on the farms. But they're hayseeds and they've got no contacts in the big city. However, they know us officers have houses in some of the bigger cities and that we do employ muchachas and nannies and such. He said, generally, the farm girls go to school up to around the 6th grade. They need to get a job. Most don't want the lives their parents had, and they want to go to the big city. So you give them a nice place to live, room and board. They get a weekend a month off so they can go back to the old pueblo and connect with their family and friends again. Normally, you make the deal with the young girl's mother, and everything's a-okay. It's a nice job, he says. Nice atmosphere with a steady paycheck. Nowhere near the hard work she'd be doing if she worked on the farm. Well, he was right about that. Now, I watched this guy and his wife and kids in action. They actually treated this girl decent enough. They never yelled at her or talked down to her. Not like I'd witnessed with some other Latin families. But you know, it's really a shocking thing to hear that. You know, make a deal like that with the mother of a 12, 13, or 14-year-old? Of course, in this case, if she's making $150 a month, I'm sure she sent 100 of it back to her mother. That was the deal she had with her family. So then, what happens to these young girls when they get to be of dating and mating age? You know, 16, 17, 18? Well, the colonel told me that's how he lost his last muchacha. Well, she had that weekend a month off and went back home, hooked up with a young hayseed, got pregnant, and now she's down on the farm in Shirley, pregnant again. He said he gave her a nice send-off, some severance pay, but it's an unworkable situation having a pregnant muchacha in the house. So now, when you hear a story like that, you don't have to wonder why the class system is alive and well and why most of these countries will remain third world. Yep, it's the same pattern in most all Latin countries. Young girls living out in the boonies with little or no opportunity and little education, ending up as muchachas in the big city. And here in Latin America, that seems absolutely normal. No one questions it. I take that back. Maybe the union organizers are. Because it certainly is a nasty, regressive system when you think about it. Is it any wonder why nearly every muchacha would give her right arm to work for a gringo or a foreigner? In fact, for those of you watching this on my YouTube channel right now, you'll see a photo from a big city Latin newspaper, and you'll see a picture of an indigenous lady. She looks kind of sad. And the caption says, in Spanish of course, Teresa Chavez, 62 years old. She makes 300 quetzales a month, that's around 45 bucks a month, as a muchacha, a domestic employee. It says her work hours are from 6 in the morning to 8 at night, without a break. She's featured in this news article because she's one of the ladies that's telling her story to one of the union organizers from what they call in Spanish, Sindicato de Trabajadores Domésticas. That would be the Domestic Workers Union. So unions are popping up. But like it says in the article, only about 5% or less of eligible domestic employees will sign up. For one thing, they don't know what unions are, really, and don't know what they can do. And many of the domestic employees over 50 can't read. Now, one lady in this article, who didn't want to give her name, says, I'm afraid to join because maybe my boss won't like it and he'll fire me. Well, that's always been a concern every time a union starts up, right? So just to let you know, with injustices in the labor force like they are down here, unions are creeping in. And just like in the States, they start out with the best of intentions and they become corrupt. By the way, just like up in the States, it's nearly all the government employees who are in unions. And the unions have also tied up a lot of the maquilas, that is, sweatshop workers. So then what have the unions done for sweatshop workers? Well, they do get the minimum wage and prestaciones, which means, you know, the Christmas and summer bonuses, and they get on that crappy medieval national healthcare system. And like up in the States, employers have to contribute to a dead broke, long since bankrupt Social Security system. And yes, unions have certain rights, like collective bargaining, and they can legally go on strike. But what have unions really done for Latin workers? Well, there's one very bad secondary effect. Politicians have learned a way to capture votes is to promise a minimum wage increase around election time. Because they know unionized government workers will certainly vote for them, and factory maquila, so-called sweatshop workers too. But a politician offering a minimum wage increase is not a fail-safe mechanism to get voted in again, because about 40% of most Latin American labor forces are off the books, and a minimum wage increase wouldn't affect them at all. So anyway, just a little bit more of the good, the bad, and the ugly here in Latin America. And to round things out, I have to say there are plenty of gringos and expats who pay their cleaning ladies, workers, and muchachas less than minimum wage. And not because they're trying to rip the employee off, it's just that normally you ask an employee what they expect to receive. And if it's less than the minimum wage, because that's the prevailing wage in the area, what you going to do? Tell them you'll pay them more? Maybe, maybe not. But of course, as mentioned in a previous show, we always give them a lot of perks and extras that they'll never get working as maintenance guys or muchachas for Latin bosses. All right, that said, you gotta hear this email this guy just sent me. He says, Dear Johnny, imagine for a second you have a brother and he's an alcoholic. He has his moments when he's straight, but still you keep your distance from him. You don't mind him for the occasional family gathering or holiday. You still love him, but he's a shadow of what he once was. Now bloated, obese, and deteriorating on his best days, he irritates easily, he's got a short fuse, and if he gets pissed off, he can still kick the crap out of you with a sudden burst of impulse energy. He's heavily in debt, borrowed from all his friends, and his plastic's all maxed out. You, of course, have had enough. You don't want to be around him anymore. He's going down and cannot be rehabilitated. You've had many interventions, but to no avail. He's in denial and getting worse. The doctors say his liver is shot and his other organs will soon be failing. Then the writer says, "Now, Johnny, I'm working hard on my plan B. And that drunken brother story is how I describe my relationship to the United States when people ask me why I want to leave. So the U.S. is like my terminally alcoholic brother, and I always have a soft spot for him and what he once was, but I don't want to be near him anymore because I know sooner or later I'll be dragged down with him and it will all end badly. So Johnny, instead of telling people all the things wrong with the U.S. and all the reasons I want to leave, I've tried that and eyes glaze over and people think you're crazy. So when they ask, I tell them the alcoholic brother version of the story. And you know, most of them seem to get it, and they listen all the way through. People would much rather listen to a story that's imbibed with facts than just a bunch of lone-standing facts themselves. Keep it up, Johnny. See you at the July seminar. Double anonymous. Like that one. Speaking of my July Latin American seminar, as this show goes out on June 2nd, we've got about 5 more weeks to go, so there's still time to sign up. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link. And you'll also see on that info sheet a reference to those very famous John Galt pre and post seminar trips. You won't want to miss going on one or both of those if you're thinking about setting up a business in Latin America. I guarantee you'll walk away with way too many business ideas. And if you just can't swing coming down to the seminar, you should really sign up for my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com and don't forget the 3 W's. Go there and get your 3 free video introductions to my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. You want to get your Plan B in high gear? Just take the Expat Essentials course. Oh, and don't forget, no matter how far along you are on your Plan B, and even if you haven't got it started yet, do what many people are doing. Set up a private phone or Skype consultation with me and we'll go over your plan individually. And you'll find my Plan B phone consult questionnaire by going to www.thenewexpat.com. You'll see the link there to pull it up. Oh, and lastly, if you're coming down to my July 2017 seminar, the phone or Skype consultation, which I normally charge for, will be free.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.